All right, good morning. It is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. And this is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners meeting in their conference room. Commissioner DeYoung, Commissioner Fowler are present. Commissioner Morgan is in Washington, D.C. at the NACO conference and lobbying our representatives and agencies there. So our first item is a forestry quarterly update.
Thank
Mr.
you, sir.
Streeter.
So I'll burn through this and then you can ask me all the questions.
Play on words, I'll burn through this.
So the main thing is our spring sales, which will happen on Thursday, April 16th, 9 a.m. here at the courthouse, are all set. They're out on the market for prospective purchasers to be looking at.
We're at in the courthouse, or is that Ambassador?
157.
Okay.
We have four sales. The list of them are on your agenda outline there that I gave you. The Greenback sale, which is up Graves Creek. That one has about $1.1 million on it. It's a regen harvest, ground-based logging.
How old?
I would say it averages in the 40 to 50 year range.
So it's pretty good size sticks?
Decent. One part of it, about 40 acres, was thinned previously. The other portion of it, the other unit, is one that is more native, no thinning, lots of hardwoods and stuff. So we're taking the opportunity to clean it up, get it planted back.
When you have hardwoods there, do you contract that out, or does the logger, the contractor, get that and he can do with hardwood what he wants?
So if it's a regen harvest, we require them to cut everything over 4-inch DBH. So if it's over 4 inches at breast height, they're required to cut it. If it then has a 5-inch by 16-foot log in it, they're required to skid it to the landing and put it at least in the slash piles to reduce the fuel loading on the ground, give us a good planting bed to put the seeds.
Then do we issue firewood permits for the hardwood? Like if you've got Madrone in there mixed in with it, do you cut that and bring that to the landing and then say, okay, you can?
As a first course, our timber sale contracts have a clause in it for firewood. It's $100 a log truck load for them to buy it, or $15 a cord to buy it. If when the timber sale is closed and we have released the purchase for all responsibilities,
he's cleaned everything up, he's done everything he was supposed to do per contract.
Right. Then we typically try to open those up if we can to the public to go in and cut them. We're one of the few people that do that anymore for folks. But it's been carrying a bit of an attractive nuisance, and we have these slash piles, and people are lighting these slash piles up. We had two of them up on the Taylor Burn lit last weekend, not this weekend, but the previous weekend, and one of them escaped, burned up about a half an acre up there. So we're struggling a little bit. We'd like to have that wood available for the public to cut,
right.
But the public needs to understand not to start our slash piles on fire. We'll do that when it makes sense.
Is there some signage we can put up there to explain that, or it probably doesn't work?
We do it on right in our permit, and we actually ask them to initial that says no fires of any kind at any time on county lands. I don't care if it's snowing up there, don't start a warming fire.
Yeah.
Get in your truck and warm up. So we do that, and we make them initial it. But I think this is more probably of the recreational community out on their quads, motorcycles, and going by a pile. And
let's start that up and warm the hands up before we go on. Yeah.
So we're struggling with that a little bit. We're not the only ones. All folks that are harvesting and building slash piles are struggling with that. We actually had on our course tract an active sale, and somebody started one of those piles up last fall and burned up about 10 acres up there.
On the slash piles, that's okay. I've been just chiming in without permission.
You're good.
on slash piles, I drive by and see slash piles, and then I drive by the next year and see the same slash pile, and the next year and see the same slash pile. And if it's like anything, like if we encourage people to clean the woods up around your house, and they get it all put into a pile, and they say, well, I'm ready to burn that. They go, nope, that's a no-burn day. And it doesn't matter if it's pouring down rain, snowing, or what. No, it's a no-burn day today. And I want to burn. Nope, it's a no-burn day. And then it's Wednesday. Ah, it's a burn day. Well, I'm at work Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Saturday, I'll do it Saturday. No, that's a no-burn day. And it just seems like you, not you, but the government is offering the burn days, but they're not taking into consideration that some people have to work.
Yeah.
And so now then, they say, you know, if I can't burn it, I don't like that ugly pile of refuse out there in my side yard, I want to burn it. And if they can't burn it, the next time that you ask, or we ask, clean your stuff up, make it, you know, clean it up, make sure it goes. No, I'm not going to do it. You know why? It didn't look bad laying in there in the brush, so I'm going to leave it there. Because we don't allow slash burning.
Yeah, we're under a little different restrictions. We're basically controlled under forest use by ODF under smoke management, which just went through a 5 or 10 year review here recently, and they actually loosened up the requirements. It used to be a zero tolerance if you had logging debris, smoke going into a smoke receptor area. So you had to call ODF and say, is it okay to burn today? The wind was blowing wrong, or it was, you know, high pressure and it was all just going to sock in. They'd say no. If they thought any smoke would get into a smoke receptor area. Well, they've loosened that up where they now have a tolerable level that they'll try and meet, you know. So you might, if you're first in line, you might be able to burn, but our being restricted on pile burns aren't that big of a deal. We usually wait till a good storm's coming in just ahead of it, burn them, get all the heat out of them, let that moisture go into the pile, put it out, you know, let it sit. We try to do it all in fall, let them sit all through the winter, let the winter put them out, so we're not dealing with them. Unfortunately, we're dealing with
some. We didn't get a winter. We haven't had a winter yet.
We are dealing with some with this last 3 weeks of just nice weather. We're having some pop up that didn't get put out, but on a typical year, and we'll get more moisture that'll help put them out, but typically we wait till fall, burn our slash piles, and a lot of it depends on if we're planting it that year too. If we're not, we try to leave them for firewood, so it's a planning process.
Yeah, I didn't know if you made a slash pile, offered it for firewood cutting, and it was offered up for 2 years, which allows it to dry out, and then it would go up like a match during a storm.
Just depends on the sale. Some of them we can't offer the public access into the tract, so those we probably get rid of them immediately the first winter. If we have public access on BLM roads or whatever, we try to offer it up as long as we possibly can for the public to cut firewood on and then get it taken care of before we got seedlings going in the ground.
Do we permit that, or does OD, does that go through the forestry department or what?
Firewood
permits.
We do.
You do.
Yeah,
okay.
We make between $2,000 and $5,000 a year on our firewood permits, both public personal use and commercial use.
And they sign a release. There's no liability that follows back to us if they
permit that
cut themselves with a chainsaw or whatever.
Correct.
Okay.
Back to the timber sale program. We have the greenback sale, $1,000,001. We have the pipe fork sale up. East Williams out of Williams, that one I think you guys are becoming a little more familiar with here, and we probably will in the future. Brass Queen is a sale that is up Jump Off Joe, and we have one unit that sits off to the east side of the county, right on the county line, and another one that sits on the ridge kind of between Jump Off Joe and would be Coyote Creek up there on top, and that one's just under 1 million feet. The granite sale's a smaller sale. It's a regen harvest salvage sale. We're getting a lot of mortality in the Doug fir up there, and it's nice Doug fir, you know, averages probably 24-25 inch DBH, and it's dying up there, so we're going to go try and get that cleaned up and get it replanted in and rehab that a little bit. At minimum bid, with all of those sales, it's got a revenue generator of about $740,000, which doesn't quite cover my program costs. I usually appraise the sales pretty cheap to get as many people as possible on board mm-hmm. to bid on them. The bid premium, hopefully, my hopes are that we get enough bid premium on these sales to cover
more people
expenses.
In the room, the opportunity for it to bid up is better than if you started out here
and go no bid.
Right.
You know, we don't want to do that. We want to let the competition sort out what they're worth. So we've been pretty successful at getting good premiums on our sales, and we hope this year's no exception. The markets below that, indications are they're pretty good. I'm hearing Douglas fir prices between $650 and $700 a thousand, which isn't what we got in 18, but it's still a really good price.
Do they have 3 years to cut?
Three summers. So we sell it in April. Usually by May or June, we have those contracts all signed through our process okay. and everything. So they'll have this summer and then the next two summers.
Because they can hold off cutting if they see the market isn't strong enough or the value up, they can hold off and say, I'm going to bet on that for next year.
There's
new president, you know, or, you know,
who knows?
A new.
There's a value in speculation. And some folks will put money on speculation. You know, if they think the market's going to be better next year, they might put money on it to cover that. The other thing is most purchasers have a portfolio of timber sales from the county, from the federal government, both BLM, Forest Service, maybe some private stuff. So we're just a small part of that, and having that flexibility if they buy a sale from us, being able to go, well, I don't need that wood today, so I can wait till next summer to go harvest it, or even the summer after, having that.
I've got plenty to do this year.
Having that flexibility.
So just put it in there as a job I need to do at some time.
Is worth money to the county as well. Moving into our inventory. Inventory plots slowed last year because of the salvage. You know, basically, we lost about 2,000 acres, so that didn't have to be inventoried. We will be going back to some of those tracks and areas in those tracks that didn't burn that hot and re-inventorying those pieces. I want to give them probably one more year to see.
See if they green up?
Not if they green up, if they brown up. Okay. Typically what happens is you might get a fire that moves through an area and you get a little bit of mortality, but then the bugs come out of the dead stuff and try to move into the live stuff and you end up with more dead. So I'm going to give it a chance to die before we actually start pounding the ground and doing the inventory update on those tracks. But we move forward. We got a new update done for 2019. The inventory is always a year behind. So we turn in plots that we did last year, and all the harvesting that was done, and our contractor updates all that, gives us that package, and we carry that into the next year.
When we let a contract, it comes out of our inventory immediately, doesn't it?
No, we do it when we cut it. So
okay. All right.
If it's in the inventory, like say we sell one of these sales, but they don't harvest it, when I send it to be updated, he'll grow that for 1 year. Now we get paid on the 1,000 or feet, so if it grows, we get more money from right. the growth that's into that stand. But at the point in which it's harvested, if it's a thin, I'll send my guys through to recruise it to see what's left. If it's a regeneration harvest, we just say, take this polygon and zero it out. It's got no volume in it anymore. And then after we replant it, we send him a new birth year on it. So we say, this is now stocked in 2023 with 400 trees per acre of Doug fir, 200 or 100 trees per acre of pine or whatever. We tell him what's there. And then the program grows that out. We go back at 10 years and do verifications on what the program says is there versus what's actually there. Grants, we did receive a $40,000 grant from the National Arbor Day Foundation to purchase seedlings for rehabilitation of the Taylor Fire.
What's your total budget for seedlings annually? I know it goes up and down, but what is for? Is $40,000 half of what you spend in seedlings? 10%?
No.
10% of what you spend in seedling? I know we just bought $350,000.
That would, $40,000 would buy approximately 100,000 seedlings.
Okay.
So it,
right.
It may be half.
So it's pretty substantial.
It is.
Okay.
That will mostly go into the nursery costs for trees that we're getting for next planting season.
Mm-hmm.
It is for purchasing seedlings, but we don't purchase them. We have them grown through the nursery, so
pay for the nursery to do it.
Correct.
So we don't have to have a nursery facility.
Correct.
Okay.
Every dollar that we don't have to spend is a dollar that's still in the reserve fund, you know, so
yeah.
We'll take
okay.
Arbor Day Foundation. And they've been very generous. Since I've gotten here, we've gotten 2 years of $10,000 for rehab on the Douglas Complex fire, 1 year of about $5,000 or $6,000, and then this big one of $40,000. So we'll be applying for it again next
year.
Sure,
sure.
They've been continually very generous to our program.
Good.
The youth tree plant was held on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of February. About 1,000 kids planted.
Wow.
About 4,000 seedlings.
That's like
over 3 days.
Cats.
You know, and kudos to my department, my guys, and the volunteers. Most of them that are involved have been doing it for 20 and 30 years, you know, and it just clicks. You know, everybody knows what they got to get done, what they got to do, and everything, and you just get there, but it kind of takes off. And it looks like it could be stressful, but because of that, it's not, you know, and it's really a good time. And this was the kind of the memorial year for Ross Rowe. We did erect a memorial up there, 4x4 carved with his name in it and stuff up there, and his family was up there for that and everything, so kind of a cool deal.
Mm-hmm.
Silviculture. Currently we're planting about 200,000 seedlings.
What does silviculture mean?
It's basically treatment of the ground. So if you want to propose a thinning or a regen harvest, that's kind of a silviculture treatment. And then it could be dealing with competing herbicides, competing brush, things of that nature.
It's ground
prep. The seedlings, kind of everything post-harvest, basically.
Yeah.
Includes a little bit of the prescription that we put onto the tracks, too. The county
get it ready for replanting and replanting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Most of the county-owned timberlands were received through tax foreclosure, and a lot of them in the same probably 10 to 20 year time frame. So in general, all of our lands are kind of the same age, and over time my predecessors have gone through and thinned those and nursed them along and kind of got them to the point where everything's kind of here. There's nothing down here.
Hmm.
It's all kind of the same age class. Well, then we had the Douglas Complex, which reset a bunch of stuff down to zero. Had the Taylor, set a bunch of stuff down to zero, and we've had some active stuff, but I don't have a lot of that inventory out there that I can go out and do a commercial thin in and say we're gonna be doing the stand a good job. So the whole object of doing a commercial thin is almost like doing a fertilizer. You reduce the competition of the stand, the trees take off and do a growth spurt for another 10 to 15 years, and then they start to kind of flatten off in that curve again, the growth curve. So if you really can't go into a stand and thin it and get that growth bump, should you really be doing it, or should you be resetting it down into that fast growth curve cycle? And that's what we're faced with on a lot of the county-owned timberlands, is they're all kind of in that age class. And the argument around letting stuff get older and bigger doesn't work very well for the county either, because we don't have any old growth. The county doesn't own any old growth. And if you did, you're very limited on who you can sell that to. There's not a lot of purchasers that'll buy that log anymore.
For big logs, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're objective.
Where's all that stuff coming from that comes down out of Happy Camp? I've seen three log loads and stuff all summer long coming from.
Goes to Riddle, Herbert Lumber and Riddle. They've
wow.
been buying those logs for an excess.
That's
of 10
a long
years.
Ways to truck it.
Yep. And they were trucking them
maybe.
Right by Rough and Ready when it was running too.
Yeah.
I know. I was working there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to go to Riddle. It really doesn't pay to grow it that big anymore. Even having it that big, you don't get a lot more revenue for that big of a log than you do a small 2, 3, 4.
And they're hard
log.
To handle.
Yeah.
You got to have the equipment to load that.
Yeah.
Versus stick mail.
So back to the silviculture, we're currently planting about 200,000 seedlings this year. That's going to bump way up next year, probably in the neighborhood of 500,000 next year, and that'll reflect in my budget when I bring it down here. We're going to begin spring vegetation control soon. We've got about 600 acres out there where we need to do some site prep work or some release work, typically grasses. Stuff that was recently planted like last year, if you don't control those grasses, you know, in the summertime, they'll take all the nutrients and water out of the soil and kill off your trees. And the cost of replanting a site is very, very expensive.
I saw a note about ground application. Do they, like, say, where there's a seedling, can they just go around that for a 5-foot diameter?
Depends on what we're spraying. If we're spraying brush, then we typically have them stovepipe, so they'll take an actual stovepipe and stick it over the seedling and do that. For the grasses, most of the products that you use for grass and herbs
don't hurt
seedlings per se, so you can just broadcast, spray it. It's the same thing, it's just done on the ground by an individual. They're exposed to it all day in it and everything. It costs about 2 to 2.5 times as much as aerial spraying, so it's very expensive.
But also, you're not getting any bids for aerial?
We did not, but we are trying to negotiate with those folks that do aerial to see if we can pick up at least some adjacent stuff to other landowners. And then we're going to have to look at going ground base on some stuff, which is an increased cost to us, unfortunately. I've said this one before, but we're continually looking at sources for improved seed. We are participators in the ProVolt Seed Orchard, and a lot of that's been moved up to Terrell out of Cottage Grove, so they're continuing that. And we're also part of another group that's taking that seed, which is basically first-gen seed, and moving it to second-gen seed. And every one of the generation improvements, you can get about a 6% growth increase out of that. So in the long run, it's worth it for us to get that growth increase out of those seedlings. Basically, it's not that they're genetically altering any trees or anything like that. They're going out in the woods in an area and going, these are the best trees, and picking cones from those, and then putting them in an orchard and identifying where they came from, then going to that orchard and going, okay, these are the best of the best. So it's kind of like breeding horses or something of that nature. You're trying to get to the best tree is what you're doing. Same thing on the sugar pine orchard out of Sprague. It is identifying trees that don't appear to develop the blister rust, pull those out of the woods, put them in an orchard, inject them with the blister rust, see if they get it and stuff, and the ones that are resistant to it, you keep. The ones that aren't, you get rid of, and you eventually kind of get to a reliability of maybe 80% that those trees aren't going to get the rust down the road when they're a mature tree. So we're continually trying to both purchase improved seed to replace old Woods Run stock that we have. And by Woods Run, I mean we pay a contractor to go out, climb a tree in the woods, and pick cones. You know, it's just, it's a tree, is all it is. The improved seed gives us that growth increase out of the improved seed. So we're trying to move to that as much as we possibly can, and still meet our needs and make sure we have seed on hand in case a catastrophe comes up like Taylor. We want to have the seed to plant it. I already mentioned this, 2021 will have a significant silviculture budget increase, and most all of that is due to the Taylor fire. Some of it will be from old timber sales that we've sold the last couple of years, but when you have 2,000 acres-ish, I think we salvaged around 1,200 of that. We gotta get those treated back into production.
Is there any claims like the Taylor fire, I'll just for instance? A lot of controversy as to how that was treated, how it was attacked, so on and so forth. Is there any method to recoup, like say you're saying you're going to have silviculture budget increase by because of the Taylor fire rehab work? If the Taylor fire wasn't there, you wouldn't have to have that in your budget. So is there anything available to say, okay, because of the Taylor fire, our rehab work went up by $75,000, and because you didn't put it out, we're gonna want a little kick in the pants for that. Is there anything available for that as reconstruct? A lot of times, you know, the federal government will go into Nashville, Tennessee, and call in a national emergency, and then people in there will be able to get some sort of help.
Not to my knowledge, there was the FEMA grant that I did apply for. Actually, my predecessor applied for, and it was going on 4 and 5 years old that just never came to fruition.
Never got any traction.
It was just a continual ask for more information, more information. Yeah. You wouldn't hear anything for 6 months, and then you'd get an email
asking for
this much information, and you're like, I already provided that at one point. You guys are killing me here, sitting there getting information after information. Yeah. And finally they got me on a good day, and I said, you know what, I'm going to move on and go ahead and get stuff done. Because we had two projects on that. One was rehabilitation seedlings, and the other one was doing some fuels work out on some ground that hadn't burned up. Well, because of the need to get the rehabilitation work done, we finally said, we can't wait for you anymore. We need to get these seedlings in the ground. So that one went away pretty quick, and we were just kind of hanging on to this fuels part of it. And it just kept, like I said, it was just an eternal paperwork nightmare with no return.
Just keeping half a dozen people busy going through the forms and sending you more forms and asking more questions.
Yeah, I personally feel like it was,
take their,
let's make his life as miserable as we possibly can and see how long it takes him.
Right.
It was just bad.
And that's kind of the way the government's getting to see how many jobs can we recreate.
Yeah, and my mentality is I like to get things done. I like to see, if we're going to propose something, let's move towards getting it done and do something. And that was just an ongoing doing things, and that was about it. So anyway, to answer your question about reimbursement, those are the only things that I know. Wally might be a better source for options on that. I really don't know of any. The only other option I know of is to insure it. Lloyd's of London, I think, do insure. It's expensive, obviously, especially in Southern Oregon. But if something does happen, then obviously you have that avenue to go get some funds to help recoup the costs.
I think I'd rather do like what we're doing now and lean on the suppression people to get it done, and more innovative ways with the cameras on Onion Mountain and, you know, detection ways. I think that's better money, better spent.
Yeah. And I think the ODF,
hoping it's going to burn down, because it's like life insurance. You're betting you're going to die, and they're betting you're going to live on forever.
Yeah, so, and it's kind of a two-pronged approach. You know, really the suppression folks are pretty good and pretty aggressive when it comes to ODF.
I think they got the message over the last couple of years.
you obviously have a little different approach on federal lands when it turns into Forest Service. But the other part of that is, you know, treatment of those lands before a fire starts. You know, there's no such thing as a good fire in June to October, you know, but if some of those lands are treated and you can get, if the fire's roaring and you can get it out of those crowns and down on the ground through those treated areas, it makes it a whole lot easier to try and fight than it is when it's roaring, because when it's roaring, you just, you step back and don't get anybody killed. It's yeah. It's pretty impressive. And that happened a few times on that Taylor fire for sure. That was a series of unfortunate events. It was a huge lightning strike. They had lightning going everywhere. ODF was scrambling and moving resources to kind of the hottest spots that they thought were trying to get away from them. And Taylor got away from them, and that Garner over there got away from them too. So it wasn't from a lack of trying by those folks, I can guarantee you that. We are doing a lot line adjustment out on our Greenback Mine track. That's been ongoing for quite some time. It's basically rectifying in the transfer of the private property over time. Somebody got dyslexia and described a triangle backwards. So what they did was, the private property kept control of the road that comes down out of that property all the way down, and then gave easements to the other people using it, including the county. Well, by defining the meets and bounds incorrectly, they actually cut off a little bitty triangle where they don't have rights to go out that road. It's on our land. So we're trying to do a lot line adjustment and re-rectify that 3 acres back to what it was supposed to be, but that's turned into a nightmare, to say the least. Just getting it through.
There aren't any houses or anything on it.
No houses. It's nope. It's just timber and old mining ground, and it's really, I mean, just the same triangle flipped. But just getting it through the planning process and everything else has been one of the reasons I'm pulled. As you well know, we do have the application for mineral exploration. We did get some requests for proposals for some consultants out. Starting to see some hits on that. I haven't delved into much other than that, just saw them. So hopefully we'll get some qualified folks that can help us steer our way through that process, make the right decisions as we move through that. Like I said, I'll do the best that I can, but I've never claimed to be much of a mining mind at all, so stay tuned. I think we had the recent land purchase. Did you guys sign those deeds of trust last week?
I think so, on the Quartz Creek.
Yes, so I think we now own another 240 acres purchased out of funds from the sale of lands that were less productive.
There's a little stack on them. I think there's a big stack on the counter to sign. But I think we did.
Yeah, so
not there will be.
Good stuff for us. We look forward to managing those and getting a return off of them in the future from the county. And mixes right in with our current ownership. So I think that's a good deal. I think we have somewhere in the neighborhood of another $500,000, I think, from the sale of other lands available to look at other purchases. So I'll be keeping my ear to the railroad tracks and seeing what's out there for us and see if we can invest that also.
Yep.
The last point that I have there, I'd like to make a presentation to the board. I think you guys have heard about the GIS app that Robert Noyes has put together for identifying dumps and squatters out there. A lot of that is on county lands. A tremendous problem. And I guess I'd like to make a pitch to the board to consider strengthening the ordinance around forest dumping. And that's all I'm personally talking about. I know there's been some controversy around a nuisance ordinance, I think, that tried to pass here a few years back, and I'm not trying to go there. I'm just trying to go somewhere like Jackson County has, which I believe it's your garbage until it's delivered to the dump. So if I go out in the woods and I find a big old dump out there on Josephine County forest land, and I find your Social Security statement in it, I can take that to the sheriff, and the sheriff can tell you got 24 hours to get that cleaned up, or you're getting cited for it because it's your garbage until it reaches the dump. And that should be the same, too, for abandoned vehicles, maybe back to the last registered owner of that vehicle. You know, we found it out in the woods. You need to go get it off the property.
A lot of those vehicles out in the woods are stolen, and if they're listed as stolen, nobody owns it. The insurance company owns it. So you go to the insurance company and say, we found that car, and you paid off John Q. Public, so it's not theirs, it's yours.
Yeah.
Could maybe lean on them. On that that nuisance ordinance, that was dumped in front of Commissioner Morgan and I on our first meeting. We had been sworn in for approximately 18 minutes. And Julie made the presentation on that nuisance ordinance, and we said, whoa, stop right there. And both Commissioner Morgan and I said, this is way too much to swallow when we've never seen it. Let's categorize that. Let's break this whole thing down into take this thing in little bites. And that's what Julie started, and then Mark's doing the following along that guideline or that model. And I think this can be just a standalone. This one ordinance needs to be standalone for this particular problem. It's not about the guy that's got 14 car bodies in his backyard in Williams, because that's his personal property. This is on county land.
This is because it's on county land, it's on BLM, it's on Forest Service.
It has its own set of nuances, so I think this can go past the people, because everybody's complaining about, I used to go up Granite Hill and now I don't even want to go there anymore.
Yeah, nobody likes to go to the woods and see somebody's dump out in the forest.
No.
You know, it's kind of a, in my opinion, like a three-pronged approach. You got to have some sort of prosecution around it, some sort of consequence to doing it.
You mentioned citation. As far as I'm concerned, citation worked, because we asked, that's one thing we asked Leah, is this what you, well, we sent them a citation. And I says, and what did they do? Throw it over their shoulder. Then we send them another letter 60 days later, and then another citation. And it was just citation, letters, letters, citation, letters. I said, when do we show up with the front end loader and the dump truck and say, we're cleaning this down to bare dirt, and you're out of here? And that's when Augustus came on board. And he'd been really good at figuring out the process to do that. Been successful.
Yeah.
So maybe this may be the same type of a deal.
Yeah, and I don't know
what rights do we have as a county to make an ordinance,
mm-hmm.
to put teeth into that. It is a problem, and I'm anything you can do, I'm a
It'd just be nice to be, it's very frustrating to go out and find somebody's name in a dump pile and give it to the sheriff, and they just go, there's nothing I can do with this, because they go to the landowner, and the landowner goes, hey, I paid some kid $10, take it to the dump, go find him.
Right.
You know, and we got to find a way to deal with that part of it. We got to find a way, which I'm going to be looking for grant options, and Amber is looking for grant options to help clean up stuff, and then education, obviously, telling people that's not cool.
I have some acquaintances over in the Brookings area, and he has a storage facility, and of course people move out, he cut the lock, and hey. So he took his nephew and said, here, I want you to haul this stuff to the dump, and it's probably going to cost you $100. So here's $100. And the kid took it all up in the woods and just dumped it. And then, of course, he gets the phone call from the sheriff, said, man, you are in deep, deep trouble for dumping in the woods. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I hired a kid just like you said. And I gave him the money for the dump fees. He said, well, he didn't take it to the dump. He pocketed the $100
and
threw it in the woods. So
we had a similar story a few years ago. We found a bunch of paint cans, about 5-gallon paint cans, probably two pickup loads full of paint cans out in the woods. Had the contractor's name right on the paint cans.
Nice.
So one of my guys, we knew we weren't going to get any help, but he just went to the guy's address and left his card. We found all your paint cans out in the woods. You got 24 hours to clean it up. That guy was on the phone right now wanting to get it cleaned up, you know, once he found out. He did the same thing, blamed it on somebody else for dumping it out there, which may or may not be the truth. I don't know. But
when you buy
getting it cleaned up,
that's your responsibility.
Yeah. Getting it cleaned up is the issue. And taking that, I didn't do it, I paid somebody else, out of the equation. You're responsible for it until it gets to the dump.
So is that statewide, or that's the Jackson County ordinance?
I believe it's Jackson County ordinance.
Can we look at that?
Yeah, because we'd want to model after that.
I've got some information on that I can get to you on that specific just part of it. Doesn't cover anything else.
I think that when you get out for I-5, the description and where you are, I've hunted down Dustman's Peak, and I don't know if I'm California or I'm in Oregon.
Right.
It's very vague out there. So if we model ours very similar to Jackson, the guy says, ha, 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 I'm in Jackson County. Just say, ha, ha, ha. There's exactly the same. We've already contacted
we'll call them.
Too. We'll call them for you. Save it. Yep.
But I'll send you what I have. I'll send you an email.
If your ask is to make a presentation to the BCC, I'm in favor of doing it.
I'd be game of considering an ordinance.
Yeah, I'd like to make a presentation on a Wednesday sometime and come with some ammunition from Bob, because we're slowly... Sorry about that. It usually is not on my mind. I would like to bring some GIS... maps that show the stuff that we found and some pictures. You know, with that app, we find one, we actually mark the location, we say what it is and everything, and take a picture or two of it, so it's all right there.
I think the message going out to the people is on this GIS thing, say, well, I don't want to snitch on it. Just say, you don't snitch on it, and we don't get this fixed, that's when the gate shows up from BLM. That's when the gate shows up from the U.S. Forest Service.
That's exactly
and
right.
And you're blocked out of your own land. Don't throw rocks at them if you don't take a certain amount of public. Mm-hmm.
You go out there and it's tore up and dumps everywhere. And they go, why are you gating this up? And it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Did you look around? And it's our policy not to gate our properties, or depends?
Not necessarily. About the only reason we would really want a gate is for resource damage. A lot of our roads are what called native surface or dirt roads. So if you don't gate them, a lot of people go up in the middle of November with a pouring rain and tear up your water bores, and you end up with a creek right down the middle of your road.
It's deer season, and they go, if there's a road, they're going to ride along in the pickup instead of getting out and walking the road. If they got out and walked the road, they'd...
A lot of those will try to tank trap, you know, rather than putting in a gate. Gates are just, they're miserable. I mean, people cut them, they cut the log. I mean, it's just a constant battle. I prefer not to gate. Our grounds are open to the public. I want them to be able to have access, but there are times on some of our roads where we don't want them accessing those roads in the winter months.
Can you put a sign up there that this gate is closed because of winter damage?
We can.
So that somebody goes, you know what, I get it, and I'm not going to break through that lock, instead of thinking, yeah, they're just hiding it. They're just hiding something from me. But if you have a little sign set to explain them why, maybe that would help. And then make sure the letters are really far apart so the bullet holes don't undo.
Exactly what I was just saying. We did that at Stringer Gap.
F-O-R, with bullet holes all over it. You can see, still read the sign anyway.
One of my guys were out at Stringer Gap a few years ago, and there was a bunch of people shooting out there, and there was a sign there that said no garbage dumping or something like that. And he said, hey guys, just don't shoot up our signs. And those same ones, he said, when he came back 24 hours later, they had just AR'd the sign all up. So how much money do you put into that, you know?
Okay, I have a question.
Sure.
The big sequoia, when you go into the fairgrounds and you're looking, there's a, it's a
dedicate a tree to somebody from the county.
The one they decorate?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's got some blight, it's dying. But I looked at that, I stopped the other day and looked at it. Did you notice that plaque in front of it?
No.
How old did you think that tree is?
50, 60 years old.
It's 36 years old.
Oh, really?
And it's a sequoia, and it's that big around at the butt. Can we grow sequoia trees? I've seen them all over Grants Pass. If you really notice, up on Washington Boulevard, I remember that was a little bitty tree, and it's this big around at the butt. Isn't sequoia redwood?
Yeah.
Is redwood have market value beyond
It does, not else? Much here locally. You probably have to sell it back into California, Corbell area, Eureka.
For decking and whatnot? Yeah.
A lot of the larger landowners down there grow it, and it's really coarse grain, just like what you're talking about, but they'll harvest it at 30 years, and it's 50, 60 inches.
That's why I'm wondering if we could take a stand that the soil says, I can't imagine out there at the fairgrounds that's ideal soil for growing a tree, because, oh my gosh, you know that there's asphalt over the
drip line of the tree. There was actually one out here, too, that they cut down.
Yeah, they cut that one down. It was
the sidewalk and the street.
But I was wondering if that might be something that we maybe take a small stand, 5 or 6 acres, because you have to plant farther apart, and give it a whirl. See what it does in 36 years, and I know that one. Yeah. I didn't run a tape around it, but it's huge. They never get really tall.
But around some riparian areas, you could probably definitely get some good growth out of those. But then, would you just be growing a big tree? What are you going to do with it?
Well, that's what I mean. If there's a market
there'd have
for
be
it,
enough of it to be marketable.
Yeah,
one-off is not going to help.
Right. There's not.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Field of Dreams. You know, if you plant it, they're not going to come. You'd have to have a lot of it here to justify some sort of a market, and that's why it exists down there, is because it occurs naturally. You know, it sprouts right out of the stumps and stuff, and they do plant it also, but there's enough of it there naturally that the market exists there.
They've got
the mills for it. They've got the sales programs for it and everything.
Okay. But I was just wondering, because when I stopped and I went, what? That can't be right. 1984 is when they planted, or 86. And I said, for crying out loud, Tammy, that's only 36 years old.
Yeah.
She says, yeah, and it's got blight. It's not doing well. Yeah, it's not doing well. So, you know.
The problem we have, even with our current native cedars, with Port Orford and Incense Cedar, the only market for that's clear up in Roseburg right now, so Little and Roseburg. So there's a decent jag of cedar around here. R.B. Brown does have a sort yard at White City where they'll purchase it, and they haul it back to, I think, Orville.
It's on hauled back.
Yeah, on hauled back. So it's not something that has a huge demand around these parts, unfortunately. And pine's now the same way.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, that's the problem is that as you invest in a 50-year stand, and you get to 46 years, and the market just tanks because we're not building houses. You know, I thought when the steel stud thing came out that was going to be extremely popular, and it didn't. We're right back to wood. Now we're cross-laminated up in the north end of the state, and this is what we're doing. And I said, well, that's kind of like plywood, isn't it? And yeah, it's kind of exactly like plywood.
Well, it's just glued together.
And in particle board, and even in plywood, it's not the wood is there just for the matting. It's like fiberglass. When you're doing a Corvette, you put these mats of fiberglass fabric over it, and then you brush resin on it. It's the resin that you end up sanding for the finish. The mat is just there to hold the resin in place. Hmm. And so, you know, a friend of mine used to sell glue for Borden's or whatever it was.
Nice thing about wood products, though, it's renewable.
Yeah, it's renewable, you bet. And I've been using the analogy that, oh, you're worried about the carbon footprint? And I told those two folks that were in, I said, you're worried about your carbon footprint. I says, I own a house over off of Cypress Street that's built out of wood from the 30s. And that carbon dioxide, it was an issue back then, was put into storage in that wood. The wood was cut and then put into that house. We didn't let it fall over. That tree would be 100 years old and would have fallen over or burned to the ground by now. But no, that carbon dioxide is in storage in that house until you tear the house down and burn it.
Most studies are showing now that over a long-term active intense forest management takes care of far more carbon.
Oh, absolutely. Than
leaving it, because you take every one of those rotations. I stored it. Now you moved it to a house or something. It adds up over time.
I told those people, I said, to be honest with you, I says, I would like to put together a program. And I says, I'll try to get it done on a national level. That in the springtime, we all go outside for 20 minutes at lunchtime and exhale. And you'll watch. The leaves will come back and the trees will come back. The flowers will start to bloom because we're no longer trapped inside. We are really being trapped inside all winter long. We're not exhaling carbon dioxide out into the atmosphere, so therefore the trees have they're on a shortage in the fall because we all go inside because of the weather, and look what happened. All the leaves fell off of that tree. Something must be happening.
Park your pickup next to that tree and put some coal on it.
When the spring comes, we all go outside. People want to be outside, and by golly, look. Kimberly, look, there's leaves coming out on that son of a gun. I think we're onto something here. And they looked at me and went, that sounds a little far-fetched. And I says, so does a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Any other questions for me?
No. Nope, thanks for the update.
Absolutely.
Move forward on that ordinance suggestion,
I went to the meeting the other day, the Forestry Advisory Board meeting at 8 a.m. I said, oh my gosh, I forgot about that. I better get out there. And I apologize. I said, you know, I've been the liaison to forestry. I've never been to a meeting. And they said, we only meet once a year. Thought I'd missed 11 meetings. I was a liaison for a year.
We're not big meters.
I went, I said, you're kidding me. I said, no, you're fine.
I love it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
See you later, Dave.
Have a good day. All right, back to our agenda. We have a Parks Quarterly update that was tabled because the person is not here.
Okay.
Review Parks Advisory Board minutes and review Bikeways and Walkways Committee minutes.
Did you get a chance to review those?
I did.
I did.
They all seem fine.
Yep.
Well,
both of those are yours, and that's that kind of way.
Yep.
Rely heavily on yours, but it looked like everything was in order.
No, I
didn't. Good minutes. It looked to me like pretty comprehensive minutes, to be honest with you.
Yep, there's some work being done there, which is good.
Yes.
Trying to get there. So,
I would entertain a motion.
Yep.
I make a motion we move both those forward to consent.
And I'll second that motion for both items 4 and 5.
Or 3 and 4.
Oh, 3 and 4, you're right. 3 and 4, I put this line in the wrong spot. And so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I say aye, that's 2-0. Those can move forward. Additional subjects or matters from commissioners?
I attended the town hall with Congressman Walden the other day. Really good exchange. He had a lot of really good information about a lot of things. He said he had met for a few minutes with Commissioner Morgan back in D.C. before he got on the airplane and came out here. Caitlin said, if you'd like, would you like to go to Medford in the afternoon and sit in on the round table regarding public health with Jackson County? So Bob Strasser from Jackson and I went from here representing the two counties' boards of commissioners. Michael and I can't remember her name, I looked right at her and I thought I should have written her name down. From our public health was there. Jackson County had 3 or 4 people from their public health. Asante was there with a team of doctors. A lot of really good information. And then, of course, Greg Walden put together what the current is, which changes daily. But one of the things that he harped on was that general procedure for a lot of this stuff is being moved aside in an effort to, like, say, for instance, if you think you have a immunization, or if you think you've got something that'll segregate this and cure it, knock it in the head. There's all kinds of little labs all over the United States. If you think you're close, then bring it to the CDC, and they say, yeah, that looks good. So they're getting, they're asking for information from all the little people, plus Big Pharma. But Big Pharma takes a lot of its raw materials from China, mm-hmm. but then they found also that India has a huge stockpile of it. Mm. But those two countries are ravaged with this virus. There are up to 6 deaths now in Washington State in Kirkland.
Yeah.
But they don't know, that one is troublesome because they have no idea how it started up there. But yeah. Then again, I look, just me speculating, Seattle is a sanctuary city. They don't question anything. And right. San Francisco is a sanctuary city. They don't question anything. My question over here, and we participated, Michael and I both participated in this meeting, was, you're an international airport here in Medford. What have you put into, do you accept international flights? And they said, no, we don't get any direct international flights. I said, do you get any international flights? You're an international airport. And if they come out of, they land in Seattle or San Francisco, it looks like, I don't know that they've done their due diligence there, mm-hmm. and the guy walks right through and goes on to the plane headed for Medford, Oregon. And he didn't come from China, he came from Seattle.
Right.
You know,
that would be the Southern Oregon touch point.
Yeah, because we are the international, we're probably a pretty good size hub, you know, compared to Eugene. Yeah, I think we're even probably more busier a little bit than Eugene.
I think so.
And Reading, so I had some concerns with that. Also, the doctor from La Clinica, which is the Hispanic clinic in mm-hmm. Jackson County, she mentioned that part of their protocol is, if somebody calls and says, yeah, I have a child and they're coughing and wheezing and heart, you know, a fever and all the signs, she said, we tell them, stay at home, don't come to the ER because we don't want you infecting our healthcare providers.
Right.
And I said, on the heels of that, are you offering an alternative? In other words, how do you detect? Is it like a pregnancy test where it turns red or whatever? Can you put something in your mouth and hold it up like a diabetes test strip and it turns green? And they said, absolutely not. And I said, do you draw blood? Is that what you have to test? And they said, no, we do it with a swab. And I said, do you have somebody that can go out to that home? That lady just called and wants help for her child. You have somebody, you have a person that can go out with gloves on and the mask. The kid comes out on the front porch and you open your mouth, you swab it, put it into a sealed thing, take it to the lab yourself, leave the kid at home. Yeah. So if the only people it'll affect is his family. You know, just say, everybody stay home until we get you back. It's 48 hours and we'll have you something in 48 hours. Do you do that? Do you offer that service? And she said, no. And I said, does anybody? No.
Right.
And I said, well, if you don't want them coming to you, then you really honestly need to get like the old doctor
mm-hmm.
and put your bag in the truck and go out and see them.
Sure.
And by the time we got done talking about it, there's 3 doctors from Asante and this great big guy. He was sitting just to my left. And he said, you know, we aren't to that yet, Commissioner. But I see the day where we may even have like drive-through labs.
Oh, mm-hmm.
To where you're behind a deal and you put it through the little tray and you got the kid in the car and you say, what do I do with this? So you follow the instructions, it's all in, and you do the thing, put it in the thing, zip it up, put it in the thing. She's got the gloves on and a mask on the other side. Goes direct into a thing and goes to the lab for testing right away, just like that. And you could see him brainstorming
right,
from thinking
of it.
So there may be something. That's I just thought
stuff.
There was a heck of a hole in, you know, we want the people. I said, if you want them to stay at home, you have to provide. They're asking you for information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're saying, ooh, you know, stay away because we don't want our healthcare people That's kind of what they're asking. They're going to you, the expert. They can't test it themselves.
Right.
So you better
come up better provide a path.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever that looks like.
I think they were thinking about that, but you never know.
Sure. Well, now's the time to think before we got to do it.
Yeah. But it was very good. It set a lot of people at ease. And, of course, Congressman Walden, he says, 14,000 people died from flu last year.
Yeah.
Two right here in Jackson County. And kids. But you would think, okay, they're hardy enough to battle the flu, and they killed two of them.
Yeah.
So all of the different H1N1 or whatever it was, and all the different strains that have come by, he says, we're still fighting Ebola. The Ebola thing.
Right.
Ebola or whatever it was. So we're still fighting that in some areas.
Isn't that something?
But he said this one here could have a tendency to get out of shape. So that's my report on that. And what else did I do? I think that was it.
All right. Well, we have a meeting tomorrow. We can share that too. I'm going to go ahead and end this meeting at 10:01.
Okay.